One of the teachings in the early Buddhist texts that I really like, and the Buddha said that to consolidate or grow right view, we need five factors: sila, sutta, sakaccha, samatha, vipassana. And sila is ethics, keeping precepts. Sutta is learning, so literally listening, hearing. So this is what we've been doing most of the day, hearing, absorbing things. And then the third factor is sakaccha, is discussion. Yeah? This is one of those factors which is essential for digesting things. We don't really begin to understand things just by passively listening to it. Yeah? Any educationalist will tell you that. Yeah? Passive listening is only a very shallow form of learning. But sakaccha, through discussing, we express our ideas, listen to what other people say, feedback, and this is how things move to that deeper level. And then samatha vipassana, tranquility and insight. So there's five things together: ethics, learning, discussion, tranquility and insight. So hopefully this is why we're trying to offer these different aspects. It's very interesting to see how the Buddha sort of anticipated a lot of these educational ideas, you know, in such a way that we're very very advanced in terms of being able to actually show a method for assimilating and understanding the teachings. So this is why we've structured this course in a way. We want you to really get a chance to bring things in, to digest them, to make them, you know, part of who you are, not just something that you listen and you go, oh, that's very nice, and then go home and forget it. So this is why we have the readings beforehand, we have the meditations, we have the discussions, we have the teachings as well. All of this works together to deepen that knowledge. Okay, so Ajahn Brahmali's just got a few of the slides to go in his presentation. So we'll finish these off to round off the discussion. And then if we have any time after that, we'll, I think, open up for if there's any Q&A from the floor.
Okay. So we have been looking at the Dhamma so far, and so far I've been looking at very, very briefly at some of the theoretical aspects of the Dhamma, and now comes the practical aspect of the Dhamma. This is about the path. So just very briefly, this is the Nalanda Sutra from the Samyutta Nikaya, the Satipatthana Samyutta, and this is here. What we see here is Venerable Sariputta and the Buddha talking to each other here. Which is quite nice. You know, this shows you just the Buddha and Venerable Sariputta, nobody else, right, talking to each other. And it's like this personal connection. And one of the things that I always found very important is to kind of make the Buddha into a person, not some deity, not something supernatural, but an ordinary person. And these kind of things, where it's almost like he's hanging out with his mates, so to speak, you know, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but they're hanging out with his friends. And they're talking together and talking about Dhamma together. It makes it very human and very, very beautiful in many ways. So that is one of the nice things about this particular sutta. Elsewhere, the Buddha says something about when Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahamoggallana both die. They both die before the Buddha. The Buddha says, "Oh, the sangha seems so empty without Sariputta and Mahamoggallana." So you can see there was a special connection there, right? A special understanding based on wisdom or whatever. And then, in this particular sutta, Venerable Sariputta says that there is no other monk in the past or the future or the present who is more awakened than the Buddha, than the Blessed One. And they would ask him, "How do you know that? Have you encompassed the minds of all the past Buddhas, all the future Buddhas, all the present Buddhas, so you know that they're all the same? There's not, none is actually more enlightened than any other." And Sariputta says, "No, I haven't done that." And that already is an interesting thing. It shows you that even the most advanced disciple of the Buddha, one of the best meditators that ever existed, he attains the very highest states of meditation, does not have an automatic access to these supernormal powers that we take, you know, that we often talk about or hear about in Buddhism. The wisest disciple of the Buddha has no psychic powers whatsoever. All he is wise, right? And this is the highest kind of, reflection of Buddhism, if you like, is wisdom and not these other things. Too often we hear about psychic powers, we hear about relics and all this kind of thing, but actually it is wisdom is much higher than that. And part of that wisdom is Venerable Sariputta's ability to draw inferences from what he understands and what he has seen through insight. And this is the role of inference here. Venerable Sariputta does not see that these Buddhas are all on the same level, but he draws an inference, and that inference is knowledge on the same level with knowledge that you experience directly. And that is another important aspect, because sometimes you will hear people say that you actually, this is just an example, that you have to see your own past lives to actually know that there is such a thing as rebirth. But no, that isn't actually 100% true. The understanding of past lives is also an inferential knowledge. You can know that through inference in the same way as Venerable Sariputta understands this here through inference. It is the inference based on understanding the nature of craving. You can also understand the nature of rebirth. So that is an important thing to keep in mind. It's not just seeing things directly. And then the last thing here is the path. And this is a very famous short explanation of the path, and it fits, of course, with all the other explanations. And this is how awakening occurs. You abandon the five hindrances. You practice the four focuses of mindfulness, the satipatthanas, and you develop the seven awakening factors, the bhujangas. So this is the path in brief. And one of the, I think, important understandings of this path is that the abandoning of the five hindrances is kind of the groundwork for developing the path. And what is that? What it is, it's just purity, right? If you abandon the five hindrances, you're purifying yourself. No more desire, no more anger, none of these negative states of mind. And that is what makes meditation possible. It's the purification process that makes meditation come together. And that's why the satipatthanas then follow on from the abandoning of the hindrances. So if your meditation doesn't work, what do you need to do? You need to look inside. What do I need to purify more to allow the meditation process to happen by itself? It's very simple. You just have to understand where to look and how these things actually work. So you abandon the five hindrances through purifying yourself. Then you do the four focuses of mindfulness, the satipatthanas, which then abandon any remaining defilements in the mind, if anything is there. And that also helps you to focus the mind onto a single object like the breath. Breath meditation is satipatthana. And then that gives rise to samadhi. The awakening factors are all about samadhi practice. They end with upekkha, the highest kind of samadhi you have in the fourth jhana. That's the path. Purify yourself, get samadhi, and you're in business. That's essentially what it is. It's actually quite simple. It sounds simple anyway. But if you have the big framework in mind, right, it helps you to decide what you should be doing. Where should I put my attention on these things? So this is one of the great powers of reading the suttas. You get these beautiful teachings like this, which guide you on the path. Okay. Last slide, I think. Yeah. So this, we have now been looking at the Buddha. So a little bit about the history of the Buddha, who he was, how he got awakened, and the teaching of the Dhamma in a kind of broad framework. And then, of course, the Sangha. The Sangha is a consequence of the Dhamma, right? Once the Dhamma is taught, the Sangha arises. The Sangha here usually means the Arya Sangha, the noble Sangha, those who actually have realized the teachings. And the Sangha started, of course, off with the five disciples in the Deer Park in Varanasi, who were taught by the Buddha. That is, of course, where it all started. But a nice story about the Sangha is this Ratapala Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 82. And it tells a beautiful story of this young man who wants to become a disciple of the Buddha. And he goes to the Buddha and says, "Please ordain me." The Buddha says, "Have you got your parents' permission?" He says, "No." And the Buddha says, "You must get your parents' permission first." And then he says, "I will see to it that I get my parents' permission." So obviously very determined, no doubts. So he goes back to his parents, and his parents said, "No way, we're going to give you permission to ordain. You must be, what's wrong with you? We have been, looking after you, and, you have a very comfortable life. You haven't been lacking anything at all. Why on earth should we give you up? You're our only son. Basically, we are very attached to you." That's what they were saying. So then Ratapala lies down on the floor and says, "I will not move from this spot until you allow me to go forth." And then eventually the parents realize that he's serious about this. He actually is going to die right there on the floor unless they allow him to go forth into the Buddhist monastic life. So because they understand that he's serious, they say, okay, it's better that you live as a monk than to die as a layperson. So, okay, off you go. And he gets ordained, he practices hard, he becomes an arahant, and then he comes back to his parents. And when he comes back to his parents, there's a very interesting what happens when he comes back to his parents. And this is a little bit from that sutta, and it tells you a little bit about the details of life in those days, how these things work. I'll read this out to you, because it's quite sweet and interesting in a number of ways. So, it goes as follows. Now, on that occasion, the Venerable Ratapala's father was sitting in the hall at the central gate, having his hair dressed. So that's what people did in those days. They were obviously quite wealthy, right?
All the inscriptions, they all had their very fancy
hairdo. Fancy hairdo, okay. So that was probably how they got the fancy hairdo. Yeah, okay. They had a special hall just to get your hair dressed. When he saw the Venerable Ratapala coming in the distance, he said, "Our only son, dear and beloved, was made to go forth by these bald-pated recluses." So he really upset when he sees these monks, right?
They had to cut off his fancy hairdo.
Right. Then, at his own father's house, the Venerable Ratapala received neither alms nor polite refusal. Instead, he received only abuse. So his parents didn't recognize him because he'd been a monk for so long, right? Just then, a slave woman belonging to one of his relatives was about to throw away some old porridge. Seeing this, the Venerable Ratapala said to her, "Sister, if that stuff is to be thrown away, then pour it into my bowl here." While she was doing so, she recognized the characteristic features of his hands, his feet, and his voice. Then she went to his mother and said, "Please know, my lady, that my lord's son, Ratapala, has arrived." "Gracious, if what you say is true, you are no longer a slave." So here you can see that you could be freed from slavery if you did something wonderful like recognizing your ex-son of the master. Then the Venerable Ratapala's mother went to his father and said, "Please know, householder, they say that the clansman Ratapala has arrived." Just then, the Venerable Ratapala was eating the old porridge by the wall of a certain shelter. His father went to him and said, "Ratapala, my dear, surely there is, and you will be eating old porridge. Is there not your own house to go to? How could we have a householder when we have gone forth from the home life into homelessness? We are homeless, householder. We went to your house, but we received neither alms nor polite refusal there. Instead, we received only abuse. Come, dear Ratapala, let us go to the house. Enough, householder, my meal for today is finished. Then, dear Ratapala, consent to accept tomorrow's meal." Then the Venerable Ratapala consented in silence.
That means he
said, yeah. something like that. Okay, so that is the just to give you some idea of some of the details you find in the suttas. And it's very real, right? It's very lifelike. You can expect these sort of things to happen. Kind of relation between parents and children. This is what often happens. And this is the kind of thing also, the kind of the lifelikeness and the vividness of the suttas is also something which gives a sense of this is very real, this actually happened. And many of these things are rather quirky and strange, you know. And obviously have very much to do with the Indian society at the time. Then the next day, Ratapala comes to his father's house. In the meantime, his father has put up a big pile of gold in the middle of the floor, which he has covered over with cloth. And then he has Ratapala's old wives, and he dresses the old wives up with all kind of adornments and lots of makeup and all these kind of things. And he places them next to the pile of gold. And then he invites Ratapala. And then when Ratapala comes, you know, he says, "Oh, you know, this is your fortune. You know, these are your wives, etc." And then Ratapala calls his old wives. He calls them sisters. And then the wives faint because they get called sisters. And then Ratapala eventually he says that the best thing for you to do, householder. He calls his father householder, right? It's pretty pretty interesting. The best thing for you to do, household, is to take all this gold, put it into carts, and drive it off and dump it in the middle of the river Ganges. That's what he says to his father. And then he says to his father, stop harassing us. If there is food to be given, please give it now. So that is the story of the father. It's a very different relationship than I have to my parents, I have to admit. Please, yeah. Right. There is different ways, but I think for me the main point is just the kind of the confidence and faith that he had in the Buddha's teachings. He was willing to offer his life to go forth. So from his point of view, that's what he was doing. From the parents' point of view, you're probably right, it was probably blackmail. So it's just different points of view here. So I find it quite, if you understand, I think this is the point of this. If you really understand the Buddha's teachings, it is a matter of life and death, It's acceptable to starve yourself to death just to be able to go forth. This is what the sutta is saying here. Right. That's probably what happened, actually. That might be what actually happened. What you're saying there. I think the. I think this is a very extreme example, and it is also said later on that the Ratapala was the foremost disciple of the Buddha in terms of confidence or faith. So obviously, it is an extreme example, and I think in reality, you normally this wouldn't happen.
You also get the opposite case where the what's the name of the novice in the Sagata Wago, who wants to disrobe, and his mother sort of tries to persuade him, no, please stay as a monk. You've got this great opportunity to live the Dhamma, and don't jump out of the frying pan into the fire or something like this. So it's not as if there was a uniform, opposition. These are very personal stories.
Right, Peng, I think in those days you didn't need permission from your wife. These days you probably would need permission from your wife. Remember that there's a very different cultural difference between India then and the most countries today. In those days, a wife would literally go and live with the husband's family. So they would be taken care of, even if the young man went forth. They would still be looked after by the family. So they wouldn't be left with their own devices. Now, if you had a wife today and you said, "Okay, I'm going off," then she would be stuck, right? She would be there by herself. Is that what she went? Okay, I see. This is a personal question. Okay, I'm going to leave it there then. I don't want to say anything wrong.
There's a story in one of the Jatakas that gives this story, because usually in these stories it's the bloke who goes forth and leaves the wife behind, right? But there's one of the stories in the Jatakas where the Bodhisattva, apparently in his past life, and he was sitting around the dinner table one night with his missus, who was Yashoda in the past life, and he says, "By the way, darling, I really want to become a monk." And the wife says, "Oh, that's really amazing, darling, because I really want to become a nun." And they say, "Oh, well, we've got these children. We can't really ordain until our children grow up." And they say, "Oh, yes, that's right." So then she says, "Oh, just excuse me for a minute, darling. I have to go outside to collect water from the well." So she goes outside and doesn't come back. And they're all sitting around. And so years later, she became a nun.
Okay. Some good stories in there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
Yes.
Tapala, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think in that kind of thing, you're probably 99% of cases, you're probably right. Because 99% of the cases, people, you know, lie on the floor and say, I will die for the wrong reasons, and not for the right reasons. And particularly if it is for the wrong reason, of course, it is not right. But if it really is the case that he has, maybe he was a stream mentor at this stage and knew what he was, you know, missing out on. Maybe he had some profound insight into the Dhamma. I don't know. There may be certain cases. There are always exceptions to the rule, right? So as a rule, I would agree that you're right. But maybe this was one of those rare exceptions where it, you know, it was actually working. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Daniel. Quick questions. We already had one. Got another lady in the back there. Sorry to break you off. Generally speaking, yeah, we always seek our parents' permission before taking ordination. Usually that's not a problem, at whatever age. Actually, I think that originally that requirement probably was for younger people who are still living under their parents' protection. But these days we apply it at every age. Obviously in certain cases, like if you get guys who are 70 or want to ordain, then there's exceptions made. But as generally speaking, yes. Right. Originally, I think it was a rule for children, yeah, which obviously makes sense, yeah.
Eddie?
Ajahn Brahmali, your previous slide, you know, you showed the seven collateral factors, the seven bhojangas.
Mm.
It was known that the bhojangas, you know, are eating things, okay? In future, they say that Buddha killed people, and that Chunda killed the Buddha was taken, okay? So it could show all this.
Yeah, that's one of the. Yeah.
Quick questions, Eddie? Yep, quick questions, good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. Even the Buddha actually says that, you know, ask Chunda to recite the seven bhojangas so he can actually get better. So it's a very interesting thing here. So it looks like, and I think there are parallels to this in the Chinese agamas, it looks like the suttas are there. It looks like there's some certain power there. Perhaps the power is just to remind you, you know, you think about these things and your mind sort of moves into that state, and that a bit, the joyous mind maybe has more power to heal the body. I don't know, something like that perhaps.
Yeah. But the bhojangas are mainly taught to get enlightened, not to get, not as medicine. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to finish off to just round off that, or are you pretty much done with the Rattapala?
I don't know. I could say more, but and there is the teaching for the king, which is very nice at the very end. There's a few lines, but
maybe we just round off. We've pretty much. Yeah. Out of respect for Aya. She can ask the last question. Okay. I mean, these are some of the things which is hardest to convey, is like the sense of tone, isn't it? Yeah, and there's a very very subtle margin between somebody who's being firm, you know, or, and somebody who's being harsh. Yeah? So these questions of tone, very hard to get across. Okay, so we should really cut it off there. We're nearly 5 o'clock, which is the finishing time for this first workshop. Thank you all so much for attending. Thank you to Ajahn Brahmali for his presentation. Thank you to the wonderful people at the Buddhist Society of WA for hosting the event, and for all of those people, Michael Dove for helping with the administration, PJ for helping with the website. Who else do we need to thank? Linda for helping with the organisation, Bianca for helping out with the meditation group at the last minute when she was asked, the Thai people for helping out with this extra influx of people for the Dana, and Lynn Jackson for helping out with everything all the time, and Christine for helping out with the sound system. Anybody else needs mentioning? Eddie for helping out with the questions. I did a bit as well. And I think, you know, we've all had a great time for today, and I think we've all learnt a lot. It's a fantastic opportunity. Please do come back for the next one. You've registered now. It's really bad karma to not come once you've registered. Do the reading. We'll be sending out an email later on with this slideshow. And so make sure you do the reading. Check out for the meditations for next time. Come prepared. And we will see you all same place, same time next month. Yes. Yeah. Okay, we will email that out to everybody again. Okay, we'll make sure that everybody has that. And if you don't have it, then please contact the BSWA. Yeah, it'll be on the website. It's on the registration page from the website. Yes. It's been live streamed and it'll be available for download later. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the AGM will be the same day, and the AGM will be held in the community hall. I'm not sure what time, in the afternoon sometime. No, I think concurrently. Yeah, it's anyone's bad karma if they have to go to both of them. Okay, very good. So let's finish off by paying respects to the Triple Gem. Yeah. Sure.